Move into item number three, and I know that the director's had a busy time in the last 2 months since we met, so Director, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, I'm going to do as I do sometimes and ask the assistant directors to give some briefings on their program areas, but I wanted to mention a few items that I've been involved with the last couple weeks besides the North of Falcon process. That has been pretty consuming this spring, to say the least, but while we've been doing that, the world's kept on turning, and there's been several other things that we've participated in that were important, I think, for the department. One of them I want to mention is had an excellent tour with in the Skagit with Derek Sanderson, the director of the Department of Agriculture. We visited the Swinomish, Upper Skagit, and Stillaguamish tribes, as well as the communities, local communities, in the mouth of the river and the Upper Skagit to talk about elk depredations and estuary restoration. It was a really excellent field trip, and it's the beginning, I think, or maybe not the beginning, but the department and the Department of Agriculture are going to try to work together. We have a lot of common ground. We have a lot of things that we agree about, and I think that we're way closer together than further apart, and so it's exciting to start those kind of communications with folks, and that was a very good trip. We're talking about another outing in the Yakima area, and hopefully maybe we'll get over to the Palouse one of these days. We'll work our way across the major agricultural parts of this state, and it's been fun. I enjoy working with ag. Another interesting tour that I made was I got to go on a prescribed fire tour. Kind of did the circumnavigation of the state. We have a big state when you get in a car and decide to drive around it. And we went from Olympia to the Sinlahiken and Sherman Creek and looked at prescribed fire. Very interesting examples of how prescribed fire areas burned with prescribed fire are then how they are impacted by wildfire. And really fascinating to see uncontrolled wildfire with some damaging consequences in the wild form come up to our wildlife management areas and fizzle out, if you will, or move across the landscape in a way that's more consistent with the pine forests and the dry side pine forests that we have in that area. Anyway, it's a fantastic tour, and hopefully we'll be able to provide more of that for the commission sometime. But yeah, it's very, very interesting and a good time. Then, as Commissioner Thorburn talked about, I went down to the 4-0 Ranch dedication. Wow, what a piece of property. Commissioner Holtzmiller truly lives in a slice of heaven down there. And if you haven't been there, please take some time to drive over to that part of the world and take a look. It really is fantastic. From the river to the top of the mountain, it's beautiful country and certainly worth seeing, a really amazing part of the state. I was also able to attend a day or two of the Northern Wild Sheep and Goat meetings that we had. We co-sponsored those with Idaho. These are the every other year they have these meetings, and there were some good discussions, lots of focus on wild sheep disease issues from around the Northwest, and our folks did a fabulous job sponsoring that meeting over in Pullman, or Moscow and Pullman. So with that brief thing on my part, I'm going to ask the ADs to give you a little bit of a briefing. And Ron, do you want to start? Ron can talk a little bit about North of Falcon and a couple other items from the fish program.
Chair Smith, Commissioners, Director, thanks. North of Falcon, not quite done. Done from a perspective of all of the documents are signed and forwarded to NOAA Fisheries for their consideration and a permit, as you heard earlier from Andy. And we await when that permit's going to be. Earlier, as we came to agreement on a fishery proposal package, I had made public comments that it would be 2 to 3 weeks. I made that based on NOAA's historical track record of taking 2 to 3 weeks from the middle of April to the 1st of May, in most cases, and having a permit for us, understanding that they've already done much of the heavy lift relative to reviewing the tribal fisheries, permitting the May fisheries under a mini biop, and as of last week, a second mini biop for the June fisheries for the tribes as well. Those reviews, that writing is done to provide incidental take authority. So my assumption was that it wouldn't take any longer than it has in the past. And in conversations with NOAA, it's going to be 3 to 4 weeks. We continue to work with them, providing them as quick as turnaround as possible with any information that they request, so that we provide that information so their turnaround for the permit is quick as possible. That is our very short-term look at north of Falcon right now. The immediate vision in front of us beyond that is the quick pivot to what do we have to do for a co-manager work plan and completing our base period updates for our modeling, FRAM, for fisheries in the future. That will allow us to talk internally first, but then as well as with co-managers about a multi-year joint permit. We've always, for some time, always believed that a joint multi-year permit, so that the permit issue is off the table, and that then all you're looking at is the meeting your management objectives, making sure that you're achieving the conservation objectives that you set forth are met, and then the permit is granted or in place as long as the review is done. That is very important. We also have meetings that we'll be setting up with NOAA General Counsel, RAG's office, and the agency to talk about a permit for the state and absent the joint permit. So that is that's pretty much our efforts right now relative to the permit status. The other very significant and important piece is we're receiving some comments. We're trying to formulate our own ideas about what is needed to be modified in North Falcon to assure that we have a smoother process. I love Dandy's comments about more transparent and the need for observers. It's something that we've asked about for years, and sometimes met favorably, but most often met negatively, that observers are allowed into the state tribal meetings. And we have to understand the importance of that in the trust responsibilities that we have with our constituents. For a constituent to walk out of a meeting saying, this is what just happened, versus me walking out, there's much more trust in that peer relationship of constituents commiserating about what happened than me coming out and giving my possible biased view of what took place. So observers are very, very important to us as are our advisors. So we are exchanging dates, trying to get to our annual meeting. That typically would have already occurred in the month of May. Because of the North Falcon extended process this year delay, that's going to be in July or August. We're still trying to anchor down a date, and that will then provide us the opportunity to have the conversations that we have not had about what those modifications to North Falcon are and how do we try to resolve differences or make those changes, make the timeline changes, whatever those might end up being that we can jointly agree to make next year a smoother process that is transparent for the public. So that's the most recent update. I would like to say that, as we talked about in the Fish Committee, as I've gotten a lot of phone calls for thank you to the director, thank you to myself, I'd just like to publicly acknowledge staff, John Long, and staff in the regions here in headquarters. Exemplary work this year in the strategic thinking and the diligent work in the 14 to 16-hour days, day after day after day, and not losing composure, not losing thought process, staying engaged, making it happen, making sure that we're recognizing people and their hard work. Just a fantastic job done by staff this year. So I'll leave you with that.
Director Unsworth, Chairman Smith, and Commission. So I'm Eric Gardner. I think this is my first time. Well, it is my first time in front of the Commission in my new role as Assistant Director of the Wildlife Program. So pretty excited and happy to be here. I don't know if that warrants any further introduction, but, you know, real quick, I've been with the agency for going on about 4 years now and have a long history of wildlife management, a full career with Arizona before coming here about 21 years as a commissioned officer, wildlife biologist. So a pretty extensive background, and I've been here for quite a while, and most recently was the deputy to Nate Pamplin, so I've been in tune with many of the issues all of you have been dealing with, but I'm also getting up to speed a little bit. I think, what is today, the 10th, so I'm on day 10 of the job, but happy to be here. In addition to that, which I think is the most exciting part of the briefing, by the way, two items have already been covered, and that was the wildlife program was pretty heavily involved in the prescribed fire tour, and we really appreciate the fact that the director was able to get out on the landscape there. And we also attended the 4-0 and had a lot of participation in that. And the only thing I would add to it is there was just some spectacular tributes paid to previous land managers during those comments that were made at that dedication. And back to from the Nez Perce ownership or relationship and management of those lands to the most recent ownership by the rancher. And so it was a really well done dedication, and there were a lot of comments made that we need to do more of that within the agency and celebrating these wonderful opportunities that we have. And it was a pretty spectacular event. The only other item I have is I'd like to provide a brief update on progress that's been made regarding the protocols around lethal removal of wolves when it comes to livestock depredation. And I feel a little bit disingenuous by being the one up here talking about them. We have Donnie Martorell in the back of the room here coming up. And he's really been at the front of this effort. I'll try to touch on it briefly, and if you have any details, Donnie here can support. But the long and short of it is, and I'm going to steal some of Donnie's fire here, if you took your most gnarly issue, the thing that really bothers you the most and causes you a lot of work, and you know there's going to be diverging opinion, not just both sides of the table, but perhaps all around the table, wherever there's a seat, there's a slightly different opinion. If you took that issue and walked out of a room one day and said, we've all come together and we're on the same page on a path on how to move forward and we're in agreement, you'd probably be really happy, a little bit in disbelief. You'd wonder if it would withstand the test of time, kind of scratching your head, is this real or not, but pretty darn excited that you'd come to that point with such a tough issue. And that's where we've gotten with the lethal removal protocol in the wolf world. So briefly, the 17-member WAG, Wolf Advisory Group, and in addition, several department staff who participate in that process have been through a pretty long process to come together, to talk about issues, to hear the other side or other sides, to understand the problems and the needs out there on the landscape, and essentially came to agreement on a protocol that, in a nutshell, is if there are 4 depredation events in a year or 6 within 2 years, there is the lethal protocol can be deployed, but there also is a requirement for sanitation plus one. And so what that implies is that, or what that means is that the operator has been taking care of the sanitation side of their livestock operation, and then one other type of deterrent activity that is functional in their particular operation. And if that's occurred and the depredations occur at those numbers, there would be lethal removal. And so I feel pretty comfortable that we have a place where at least if we get to that spot, we know clearly what our action is supposed to be. And then when we take that action, we'll believe we'll have the support of all of our constituents as we move forward. And a big part of that is their agreement to be supportive of the outcome of this particular effort and to carry that support back to their constituents that they represent and sort of defend where we are at in this position and try to allow the process to work. Donnie, did I misspeak?
Yeah, you did a great job. So, 10 days on the job, and you nailed it. So, unless commissioners have any questions.
Any questions?
Yes.
I'm very pleased to see the progress on this particular issue. That's a tough one. There's been a lot of tough ones around the wolf issue, but I had a conversation a couple months ago with one of the stakeholders that's on the board. And he felt that if this was not reached, if a determination and policy wasn't reached by May, then we were in serious trouble. And you've accomplished that. And not only staff from the department that helped us along, but our other advisors and the White Committee. There's just a completely different atmosphere from what I understand. And I want to thank you guys for the efforts, because you've sat through a lot of ugly periods in this process, and I'm very pleased with progress.
Commissioner Braville, thank you very much. I would like to call out and thank, really, it's Eric and I up here today, but the real work was the 17-member WAG and the department staff that were there, been working hard over a year to reconcile relationships. They come from very different corners of kind of who we are as Washingtonians, and have made a commitment to really roll up their sleeves and get to know each other and tackle this tough issue, and they did an excellent job.
And there again, just want to thank you guys being on the other, kind of on both sides of this issue, on the Game Commission and then running cattle and then having a neighbor that lost a calf about 5 miles from me. And we've had wolves around all winter and spring. But there again, back to all the hard work, and I guess we really need to thank Francine, because I think she's done a spectacular job bringing this whole process together. And I shared this concern with the Wildlife Committee this morning, that we have made some commitments and that we have to adhere to those commitments when we say that we're going to have our protocols and we've got to follow them. And I know there's going to be pressure brought to bear once rubber hits the road and we put this to a test. And there again, I want to thank you guys as a rancher. I feel very confident that this is going to work. I know we had a meeting. Commissioner Keeney came down and made a presentation. I thought it was well received in our part of the world. But there again, we've got to stay the course. We've got to stay the course. So lots of thanks go out, and we're in another world from where we were 18 months ago. Thank you.
Mr. Keene.
Thank you. And I too, just want to congratulate the work that's been done, but also put and just kind of phrase it in a way that we remember where we're at in the state. So the lethal take protocol is for the portion of the state that's not federally listed. So that, as a tool, which is a good tool after non-lethal has been deployed and not been successful, it's not available for another big part of our state. So there's work to be done to where, you know, that can happen. And as well that there's a knowledge that, you know, even in areas where the lethal take protocol can be applied, it's still, you know, a federal offense to take a wolf that's an endangered species outside of that protocol. And I see in the report there's an investigation going on for suspected wolf poaching in Ponderay County. So that message about it's still not okay to take an endangered species outside of a good protocol like this that's been prepared for a reason, you know, where livestock depredation has gotten or is getting out of hand, you know, then things can happen. So just, you know, some kind of boundaries to it. And again, but great work, you know. The organization I work for sits on that Wolf Advisory Group, and I think there's been some great progress in the relationships that have been built between the hunting community, the ranchers, the environmental groups that are sitting on the WAG to come up with this and have it being simple enough that I applaud that you went that way, because it could have gone away where it was real complicated and you had to do this and had to do that. This is clear, and as Commissioner Holzmiller says, you know, when the time comes, which it will, where it has to be deployed, you know, I think that WAG has to stand behind it, and I believe they will.
Thank you.
Another comment?
Thank you. And that's all I have. Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Thank Commissioner Keeney for bringing up the point about Western Washington still being federally listed. And that ties our hands. And so can you give us a little bit of the flavor of the conversations you've had with the Fish and Wildlife Service about what we're going to do in the western two-thirds of the state? Any new developments on that front?
Do you want to start?
Yes, Commissioner. No new developments in terms of any change in listing status in the western two-thirds of Washington, where, as you've already mentioned, they're federally listed as endangered. We have recently met with the service and been talking about other potential tools, and I'll call out relocation of wolves within a recovery zone as a less than perfect tool, but something to address if depredations start to occur in the listed portion of the state. And so they're currently working on an EA to be able to have that authority. So we are kindly nudging them that direction. Mm-hmm. And so there is a looking forward now, and it's potentially something that that WAG will be talking about at the next meeting, July 6 and 7, is some focus on just that, being prepared for, as this recolonization of wolves keeps marching westward, being prepared for how we'll deal with situations in that part of the state.
And I'll just add to that. I mentioned in my, you know, example of how exciting it is to come out of a room thinking, did that really happen, and will it withstand the test of time? Mm-hmm. Certainly, as we look at lethal protocol removal in the delisted portion of the state, but still with a recovering wolf population, we have protocols set in place. And then in this example, in the listed area, if that were to occur, a different type of action and taken at a different time, maybe it could happen after one event. And so when we, you know, have to address those sort of discrepancies in management across the state, I think that will be one of the tests of time that we'll have to weather through and see how to respond to. But it's on our radar.
So am I to understand that when there's wolf issues in the listed part of the state, that it will be up to the Fish and Wildlife Service and federal agents to respond, or are we going to be given some sort of authority to do something?
I'll let Donnie add to this, but usually there's a partnership there, and the reality is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service just does not have the resources on the ground to be responsive in the first place. So no matter what we would all like to see and how it's spelled out, it's very likely that the state is going to be engaged in that initial response and assessment. But essentially, if an action is taken, it would require the federal authority and nexus to take that particular action. Through our partnership and relationship and our permits that we have, we would be able to cooperate and perhaps participate in those actions. But I think those will remain to be seen if that is something that the state, you know, would be a part of or not. We need to wait to see how the EA process unfolds. Anything else, Tony?
Yeah, I'll just add that in terms of kind of on-the-ground wolf management activities, that we're a one-stop shop service. You know, we're working and already have relationships with producers. We are each year going through capture operations to catch and collar wolves and monitor recovery. And so all of those activities that we're doing in eastern Washington, we're doing in western Washington as well. And in that case, we're working under Section 6 in the agreement with the service that although they're the lead, they've deferred to us for those field activities because our deployment and our presence in the field. And that stops just at the point of any management action where when we defer to them, or they would be clearly the lead in that.
Okay, thanks.
Eric, thank you, and thank you. Congratulations. We look forward to seeing you in front of us many times.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commission, I do too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Jeff Davis is going to give us a very brief discussion of I should have banned the wolf discussion. I don't want to eat up Raquel's time.
Yeah, thanks, Director, Mr. Chairman, Commission members. Jeff Davis, Habitat Assistant Director. I want to go first next time just for the record so I can say what I need to say. Maybe start with a real quick kind of briefing on some latest developments of a seldom known and almost no controversy surrounding the HPA program. That's the hydraulic project approval program. So I sent a message to all of you. We did get our formal Attorney General opinion, which Director Unsworth requested regarding the HPA jurisdiction. Hopefully what you read was that it's a pretty good opinion. I think it's good on the side of protecting fish, and it made me smile a lot externally and internally in knowing that we've been applying our jurisdiction for decades consistent with what that opinion states. So the good news is I don't think hopefully the regulated public isn't freaking out that there's going to be some massive expansion of where we're requiring HPAs. There should be little to no change or feel by regulated community on that effort. And we'll continue to work with the regulated folks so that they become comfortable that this isn't going to be some expansion of how we've been operating. Another piece of news, not sure if you were aware or not, but yesterday several of us had the privilege of going over to the Joint Administrative Rules Review Committee. That's a legislative agency made up of senators and representatives to respond to a petition, which you all saw, from the Citizen Alliance for Property Rights. They also petitioned to this legislative agency, and we expect after presenting our case that there'll be some action, although it may result in a letter to you or me saying, hey, do a better job next time. The piece that carried some weight in the conversation was how the HPA rulemaking led to, it was around the implementation plan and the timing of the implementation plan with the timing of the commission's rule adoption. So the good news is, from the Attorney General's perspective, we're totally compliant, and the petition had no merit. That said, the components of the petition that the property rights folks brought up is good data for us to understand their perspective and what their expectations are with how we do our rulemaking and how we implement our authority. So that's good. I'll cut it short there because you're going to hear from me and other folks from the Habitat Program on climate change, the Regional Fishery Enhancement Group. We won't be part of that, but strongly support the RFEG program. They're great people doing great work and leveraging a lot of private dollars with every state dollar we can provide them. And then we have another HPA agenda item for later. So appreciate all your efforts and support. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Sorry. There's times I get to feeling like Debbie down around here. We hear a lot from our agency people about the HPAs. In my other job for the road department, we had taken one of the department staff out and looked at two different projects that we were wanting to do. And they were bad spots in a road that we wanted to address, and it wasn't if they were going to blow out, it was just when. Because in our part of the world, we're generally pretty dry, and then when we get a big event, they can't come in. And this was one spot in particular, and it was even on department ground. that we wanted to go in, do some work on, and it was actually out of the department's hands because we were wanting to do some riprap. So the minute we had did that, then we needed to file with the Corps to put place something in the creek riprap. In all seriousness, it just got to the point we turned around and walked away. We will have to go fix this one of these days. The next flood event we have, it will blow out, put thousands of tons of dirt into the system, which we were trying to avert. But it just got so cumbersome to deal with it that once you're working with emergency regulations, they're a lot easier to work with. So that's what we finally just made up our mind. Well, we said, to heck with it. Next time we have a flood, when we get ready to do it, we basically have our plan figured out what we're going to do. So when it blows out, we will go fix it right the next time. But it was one of those situations where trying to get permission to do it was just going to be a nightmare. So I just need to point some of these things out that were, there again, letting the perfect become the enemy of the good. So we need to keep these in the back of our minds because we deal with HPAs on a fairly regular basis. And it is, you just get to the point, yeah, we'll deal with it in an emergency situation and not try and be proactive on these. So,
nice to see you again.
I didn't hear a question. That's why.
No, it wasn't. It was just more of a comment. Just to remember this when you're making a lot of these regulations, that pretty quick they can become so burdensome that, yeah, they're tough.
Yeah, we'll touch on that a little bit in the HPA listening session agenda item, but it's fair to say that there's a lot of regulation out there. It's also, in my experience, 16 years within the HPA program or running from it, that we typically, the HPA program typically gets a lot of heat, and it can get the heat because of frustration with ESA or the Corps or...
Core is the main thing because we've had really good luck working one that was just a department. And then all of a sudden they come and tell us that the minute we're going to do riprap within the water, we've got to go through the core. And you're going, what? And we have to deal with somebody in frickin' Tri-Cities and trying to get them there and on their schedule and blah, blah, blah. No, as far as the local guys we've had to work with, they've been great. They've been fantastic. But then all of a sudden, when the core got through in the middle of the deal, you're just going.
So, yeah.
And it's out of your hands, I know.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Jeff.
All right, well, thank you. I know we're going a little bit over time, but I'd like to have Steve come up. Steve, I would like to acknowledge the great work you've done. And I've enjoyed working with you and wish you all the best in your new endeavors. And thank you very much for... being the chief here in Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you, Director. Commission Chair, members of the Commission, and Director Unsworth. 14 years, great career. I wouldn't change a thing that I've done over the years. It's always been a growing experience for me. I've always found opportunity, and I've also looked for the very best people to put into the enforcement program. And thank you, Commissioner Wecker, for all the accolades. I couldn't have done any of those without the folks behind me here, and not just the enforcement folks, but also my colleagues at the AD level, as well as down within the ranks. This is truly a team at WDFW. Couple of things that I wanted to address real quick is that Deputy Chief Sensi is just returned back from Washington, D.C., had some pretty intense discussions with NOAA over the funding base for a joint enforcement account. This year there's a new director in charge of the LEO functions of NOAA, and there's some significant performance matrix that have been put in place, and DC Sensi has done a great job at negotiating, giving us enough flexibility within those performance metrics to get the job done in a meaningful way. He's also provided some additional flexibility in the funding that can allow us to help out on the international level. An example of that is IUU fisheries, and one of which is king crab from the Russian regions. This species of king crab is really not sustainable. It's not a sustainable fishery, and about 76% of that king crab comes into Washington State as either a point of distribution or actually consumption within the state of Washington. So we really wanted to be a player on that international front, and that flexibility has been provided through his negotiating efforts. Moving forward, I'm sure there's always concern about who comes in after the incumbent leaves, but I am very, very pleased with the folks that work within the enforcement program. There's going to be sound candidates, I'm sure, that come through internal sources, and there's going to be interest abroad or across the nation, I believe, and also within the state and other law enforcement agencies. So I've been a part of that recruiting function. I really hope that we can get another sound chief in here, and that's certainly the goal. Back in the back of the room, he's hiding back there. Chris Anderson is currently the acting chief, and he'll do a great job. I've been feeding him with a fire hose all week, and he's been picking up things great. I think his deputy chief Hobbs back there. There he is. Somebody's going to help us keep afloat as well, and you know Mike Sensi is also going to be in place there. So good hands. I feel confident moving forward that the enforcement program is going to be doing just fine. Reference your chair, Commissioner Mankin. I just want you to know that, you know, the law enforcement program provides a wide range of law enforcement services right up to the level of felony arrests. And your chair was put together by the Department of Correctional Industries. So I don't know if we had anything to do with that, but just trying to draw those lines. But again, 14 years, I've had an incredible career, experienced some of the most amazing things the state has to offer, and I thank you for that opportunity.